Good evening, everyone. This is John W. Vanderkirk speaking for Alka-Seltzer, bringing you the news of the world with reports direct by shortwave from overseas. Another famous traveler has just reached Australia. He is Manuel Quezon, the president of the Philippine Commonwealth. Mr. Quezon and his Filipino war cabinet were greeted by MacArthur today, and the inference is that they made that dangerous sea jump to Australia just as MacArthur did, by plane. Far behind them, the Japs, with growing rage and impatience, have attacked stout Corregidor Fortress at the gate to Manila Bay 7 times in the last 24 hours, almost without interruption. But Corregidor has yet received no mortal wound. In Washington, the order has just gone forth that there is to be still closer cooperation between United States Army and Navy forces, who have the job of watching out for and hunting submarines off our Atlantic coast. All Army patrol planes are now to be under Navy command. And now, a word from Charles Lyon.
If your job is the kind that keeps you on your feet most of the day, or one that requires a certain amount of physical exertion, you probably come home now and then troubled with muscular aches and pains. So, when you do, try this. Relax and freshen up with Alka-Seltzer. Alka-Seltzer helps comfort those aching muscles because its pain-relieving analgesic, sodium acetyl salicylate, is already dissolved when you take it and is therefore ready to go right to work to bring you the kind of relief you want. And thanks to valuable alkaline buffers, the analgesic loses little or none of its effectiveness. So remember, for fast relief in muscular aches and pains, relax and freshen up with Alka-Seltzer. And now, the news of the world.
We turn first across the Atlantic Ocean to London for the first-hand report of Robert St. John.
This is London. Today it was stated authoritatively here that the Nazis are holding disembarkation exercises in preparation for an invasion of England or of Sweden or Leningrad. Today, two men who were dropped recently from Churchill's cabinet were elevated to the peerage. Moore Brabazon becomes a baron. Captain Margeson, a Viscount. Tonight I give you the story of Carl Wright, who escaped from the Nazis without knowing it. Carl was a member of the Norwegian Parliament. The Gestapo arrested him last year for anti-Nazi propaganda. They threw him into a prison. One night last month, a telephone call came to the prison from the German security police. Gestapo agents said the call would arrive at the prison in half an hour to remove Carl Wright and three other Norwegian prisoners to another camp. Before the half hour was up, two cars drove through the prison gates. Four Gestapo agents got out. They talked fluent German. They had credentials. They collected their men, threw them roughly into the cars. Poor Carl Wright and his companions feared what their fate might be now. But a few miles down the road, they discovered they'd been kidnapped by free Norwegian patriots, modern Scarlet Pimpernels. They were taken to a hideout in Oslo. Finally, they were smuggled out of the country. And tonight, Carl Wright, stocky Norwegian with graying hair, the man who escaped without knowing it, is right here in London. Only his deep-sunk eyes reflect the months he spent in a Nazi prison. And now, this is Robert St. John in London, returning you to New York.
In India, Sir Stafford Cripps, Britain's special negotiator, and India's elderly, unofficial popular leader, Mohandas Gandhi, today spent more than 2 hours in friendly consultation. Both men, both before and more importantly after their talk, were observed in high good humor. What they said is secret. But significantly, reporters in India are today permitted for the first time to guess what the nature of the proposals for Indian independence, which Cripps has brought with him, probably are. And this is the guess. That as soon as the war is won, India is to become a free British dominion, with the free right also to withdraw from the British Empire. That after the war, each Indian state and province should vote on its wish to join that Indian dominion, with the privilege, if any province decides against joining up, to stay outside the Federation. Such states as did decide to remain aloof could then form their own separate federation, which would also have free dominion status. Or, if some Indian districts still voted not to ally themselves together, they should have the further right to carry on as they were, with complete provincial autonomy. Britain, meanwhile, is to undertake the defense of India until the war is over. Indian minority groups, whatever happened, would be guaranteed those safeguards for the protection of minorities, which were worked out fairly well long ago by the League of Nations. Cripps proposes, beginning right away while the war is still going on, that the British Viceroy's Council shall meanwhile be completely Indianized, and that popular government should be at once restored in all areas. This London offer, which in its real essence seems to go the whole surprising way toward that long-promised goal of Indian freedom, it is thought may be the long-awaited answer to the Indian Muslims' persistent refusal ever to accept any other independence plan which would lump all of India's diverse peoples into one big lump. It is not so likely, however, that the Gandhi Congress group, which insists on full power over all of India, will be quite so well pleased. And now we cross our own nation and span the wide Pacific Ocean to bring you a report by Martin Agronsky in Sydney, Australia.
Martin Agronsky calling from Sydney. The appointment of Australia's former Middle East commander, General Sir Thomas Blamey, as commander-in-chief of the Allied land forces in Australia comes as no particular surprise here. The corollary announcement that a large number of veteran Australian troops have safely arrived here from the Middle East is perhaps more important. The basic meaning of both announcements is that General MacArthur can now go straight to work on welding together a strong and completely unified Allied army in Australia. Blamey's record in the Middle East is that of a solid, tough soldier. It's hoped he will prove an effective foil to the more volatile MacArthur. MacArthur's problem at the moment is as much political as it is military. By no means is it simple. For you at home to understand it properly, just ask yourself this question. How would the American government, or for that matter, the American people, feel if the general of a foreign army were to be handed over the supreme direction of all the forces and resources of the United States? The Australians would not be human if they didn't regard MacArthur with a strongly qualified approval at first. Though publicly, MacArthur's assumption of the supreme command has met with nothing but hosannas, I can assure you that the Australians are human. As one Australian cabinet minister put it to me yesterday in Canberra, MacArthur will have to be as much of a ballet dancer as a general to avoid stepping on all the sore toes sticking out around here. I can give you some idea of MacArthur's success so far in his political jump by repeating the minister's next remark when I laugh at this quaint analysis of MacArthur's problem. I must ask the general, the minister said, where and when he found time to learn to dance the ballet. And here's one for the history book. John Mintner, American First Secretary in Canberra, told me yesterday that when he informed MacArthur on the steps of Australia's Parliament House last Thursday that he had been awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor, the general said, I quote, "Thank you. It's a great honor, but it really belongs to my army." This is Martin Agronsky returning now to San Francisco.
And next, a direct report by Robert Magadoff speaking from Moscow. Go ahead, Moscow. Come in, Moscow.
This is Robert Magadoff speaking from Moscow. This is probably my last broadcast from Moscow for some weeks to come, as this coming Sunday, I'm leaving with my colleagues for Kuibyshev, which is still the diplomatic capital of the Soviet Union. I have every reason to believe that before May 1st, I'll be addressing you again from this great city of Moscow, which is inspiring and guiding the Russian advance, continuing on every sector of the front, as well as the gigantic battle for this year's harvest, which has begun on the country's boundless plains. Calm and confidence are outstandingly characteristic of the mood in the Soviet capital as both armies prepare for yet greater clashes in the near future. With the ring around the encircled 16th Army growing tighter and General Zhukov continuing to shatter the German fortifications in the Smolensk region and Tymoshenko moving further west in the Donbas area, the average Muscovite, although the war is, of course, uppermost in his mind, still finds the leisure and the mood to miss the bright yellow mimosa, a traditional feature of the Moscow streets at the first signs of spring. The mimosa cannot be found here now because early flowers have to be flown to Moscow from Crimea. The mood of the Muscovites, which a Russian friend of mine aptly described as a vigilant relaxation, is especially apparent as one walks past the multicolored, onion-shaped cupolas of St. Basil's Cathedral on a sunlit day.
That was Moscow. Now to Washington and the news at home, reported by Earl Godwin.
Good evening, folks. The war program rolls right along. Tremendous decisions, vast resources and monies laid out daily at the disposal of the fighting forces. The Army and Navy today join hands in a unified effort to stop the submarine warfare on both coasts after the shocking lack of cooperation had been reported. This joint move puts Army planes in action against Axis submarines. The Army sets up a new expanded training program for the tough sky-dropping parachute troops, the terror of the new warfare. The House of Representatives gets another $17.5 billion appropriation bill to provide for another sky full of air warplanes, leaving only 23,000 planes to be planned, bought, and built out of the original Roosevelt batch of 185,000 warplanes, and the 60,000 plane a year speed may be reached this fall. But along with these goes the rumbling of dissatisfaction and upheaval. The daily disclosures of inordinate wartime profits bring forth the view that the only Americans making any real sacrifice are those in uniform. And in spite of the terrific daily Russian stories of defeats visited upon the frostbitten Nazis, the truth is the Germans are not taking such a loss after all, and the word goes from the White House to rush with all speed the least lend aid for Russia. Congress is disturbed over the trustbuster Arnold's statements concerning the Standard Oil Company of New Jersey. He today charged the oil concern with having planned to produce gasoline for Hitler along about 1938. Before the Senate also are statements showing that Germany had exceeded all the democratic countries in the production of aluminum for years past. Also that the New Jersey Zinc Company has refused to permit the use of its patents to American concerns in the face of a demand for zinc for the war, with two or three apparently minor exceptions. Meanwhile, the Senate hears German and Italian producers are using the very zinc processes denied to American producers. Tea packers are told that they must cut their shipments in half while the East is in such precarious position. Oil boss Ickes warns us that the East Coast fuel oil is way too low, and he starts building up the supply. And price boss Henderson sets a ceiling on pork prices at mid-March levels, and he asks you to protect any real pork price increases and report to him. So, you housewives, you can be an FBI. That's Family Butcher Investigator. And that's all from Washington at this time.
Here are some things which we believe can give relief for your distress. Take Alka-Seltzer at once according to the directions inside each package. See how quickly it can ease that dull, ache-all-over, feverish feeling. Get lots of rest, too, more than usual. Avoid drafts and stuffy, overheated rooms. Dress comfortably and watch your diet and your vitamins. And for the sore throat, which often accompanies your cold, dissolve 2 Alka-Seltzer tablets in a quarter glass of warm water and use it as a gargle. Now, these are all simple steps to take for cold misery, but they can help you feel better fast. Ask your druggist for Alka-Seltzer and never be without it in your home. Now, back to the newsroom.
Ankara, military observers in the Turkish capital tonight predict with great specificness what they think Germany's next move will be. The Nazi spring offensive in Russia, they believe, will begin about the third week in April. It may coincide with a German drive at the same time toward the oil fields of the Middle East, a drive around and below Turkey, bypassing Turkey, which will begin perhaps with a Nazi air attack on the small British Mediterranean island of Cyprus. And that's the news of the world. This is John W. Vandercook speaking for Alka-Seltzer. Until Monday at this same time, goodbye from the newsroom in New York.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.